City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Mitchell Fain.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And you're listening to the Windy City Queercast, show number 49, barreling into show 500. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Mitchell Fain.
Can you believe that? 500 shows.
That's crazy.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I feel like that maybe Pierre ought to start planning the fireworks. I know what's going to happen.
All right. Well, that's a little bit
something
delusion
big.
Of grandeur.
I know.
But something big.
It's my Sunday morning delusion of grandeur.
I'll get you a donut.
Get me a donut with some sprinkles on.
Nice. Colorful rainbow sprinkles.
Exactly. Wow. Well, let me tell you, some fireworks went off this week, at least for us in the LGBT community, because really this was a historical election week this past week
on
so many levels.
Can I just start off with controversy?
Yes.
The conservative can suck it.
Yeah.
Seriously, our country said that like kidnapping the idea of G-O-D God and telling gay people that they're not real this is the turning of the tide. America said no, we're not buying that anymore. Young people, progressive people have said absolutely not.
Yeah, you know, and it's that difference, right? I mean, even my sweet dad wrote that.
I know, that was
really
amazing.
Cute Facebook post. I'm sorry, all of you don't have my dad as a dad, because let me tell you.
I'm sorry I don't have your dad as a dad.
You know, he wrote a Facebook post, and my father's not a profoundly political man, but he wrote this thing about saying, you know, both of these men are good men, but one of them is aligned with a party that is just on the wrong side of so many issues, essentially, you know, the equality issue and basic human rights. And,
right, between immigration and gay rights. And
I just think, you know, I mean, and it does take it down to me, too. It's not these two figureheads, though they are a representation of, but it is this political, you know, for the first time in history, the past, you know, here just months ago, we saw a party platform.
Right, that included us.
That included us as GLBT people. And I just think that what happened in America, being historical, is that, you know, marriage equality, or the potential for marriage equality, won in four states. Not mm-hmm. just one, which we thought would
right.
be huge.
No, it was a huge night for us.
Because we've never, ever, ever had a popular vote win a marriage equality referendum has been up.
The past 4 years has been such an incredible... I mean, I'm not sure there's been such a turning of the tides with the civil rights issue that has happened so quickly.
Yeah.
It's happening so quickly as the next generation mm-hmm. is sort of coming into the political arena, as young people are participating
mm-hmm.
because of the post Will and Grace world, because of Modern Family, because of
Ellen DeGeneres,
Adam Lambert, Anderson Cooper.
We have a lesbian as a cover girl, for God's sake.
Right, exactly.
You know?
It has just changed. I mean, I have young friends who just, you know, right before Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed, I have friends who were in their, you know, late teens, early 20s, who didn't actually know
that gays couldn't serve.
No, they didn't know. Because it never dawned on them that that would be something that anyone would ever make a rule.
Well, and we're so behind on that issue. I mean, most European countries have had gays serving in the military for a really long time, you know. I mean, I think the interesting thing is that I think Obama will go down in his term as being the gay presidency. And it's you know.
Well, that's what I'm really proud of. And I agree with you. What I'm really proud of as an American this week is not so much that we elected an African-American president the first time, but that we re-elected an African-American president. Because electing him for 1 year, I mean, for one term, and then defeating him and not giving him a chance to really fulfill his promise as president would be a perfect way for the bigots in this country, which unfortunately have taken over the Republican Party. I'm not saying all Republicans are bigots, but I'm saying there is a bigotry and a homophobia and a misogyny and a racism in the Republican Party that has taken over. And if he had lost, Obama had lost, then it would be easy to say, well, we gave them a chance. They, I'm making air quotes, they couldn't do it. See, they couldn't do it. And I'm proud of our country for saying, yes, you can. And we trust that slow and steady wins the race. And
well, and it will be really interesting to see how this horse will run now that he can just run.
Exactly.
Because I really want that Barack Obama in the White House for the next 4 years. I mean, I want you to go big and go home.
Now, true.
Because honestly, you know, as my 104-year-old grandmama would say, they wouldn't give that man air if he was in a jar.
Right.
That's what she said about Barack Obama, you know, like in year two. So, I mean, and I think it's just really interesting to see what will he do, you know, what will he do if he just... Really, I mean, because I think he was spending so much time doing what he could do, trying to play the political game,
which he
trying
did to be a friggin' conservative. Lot. People keep saying, like, he did nothing for this country.
He did a ton.
I mean, these people that you see on the news, these unbelievably uneducated people who are saying things like, well, because he's a Muslim and an atheist. I saw this woman say, because he's a Muslim and an atheist. It's like, and the interviewer who's trying to be, right. you know, neutral said, is he a Muslim or he both? Unfortunately, my dear, she was Southern.
I'm sure.
Did you see that map? Did you see that map that was on the Huffington Post? And it was the map of our country with all the slave states. And then it was a map of the country many years later with all the segregated states. And then it was a map of the country that voted for Romney on Tuesday. And it's all the same states, my dear.
I'm sure. I'm sure it is.
I know it's not you and your family. God bless Leo Matheny.
God bless Virginia and Leo.
I mean, they're just steady fab.
With their Obama little sign.
God bless
them,
you know what I mean? And
but I think that even them, you know, I mean, I think here's the thing. Here's the thing that's
Don't you think
turning.
It's curious, so that the map has remained the same?
Yeah, but I think, you know, I think... where people come from and their homes, you know, I was saying to somebody the other day, because somebody, I was having lunch with somebody and, you know, she doesn't live in her hometown of Cleveland, Ohio anymore. I'm from Cleveland, Tennessee. And we were talking and I said, you know, where's your home? Like, and she goes, well, I don't really have it. My parents left. My parents have now moved. Her family's actually moved from Ohio to the South, which is really interesting. I mean, most people move to Florida South. So it is really interesting, you know, that we were just saying, she said, well, it's just amazing, you know, how I think our generation, you know, we've left kind of, and I said, I actually disagree because most people I know that I grew up with still live in Tennessee.
It's true of New England,
and
too.
I think that it's an interesting, I mean, maybe it's just a Southern thing, but I definitely think the more liberal states are the states that are the youngest in the U.S. And I think they are transitional states that people move to, they select. And then I think there are these, unfortunately, or fortunately, or just it's a fact, you know, these original places that people come from, their grandparents come
from.
But
why do they hold on?
And then all the old people move there.
Right.
So the old people vote for Romney, too. No matter the race, they vote for Romney.
Exactly right. They're going to vote for the Republican. Now, I just think that it's curious that that part of the country just refuses to acknowledge that we are, and I know this scares the shit out of people, the browning of our country.
Well, I will say it's starting to happen.
When I say browning, I mean Hispanics, blacks, gays, women in power. When I say brownie, I mean
anything that's not white male. Anything that's white,
straight male.
Well, I will say,
so pissed. It's like that Karl Rove on the on Fox News right after. Yeah. I mean, he literally, I can't believe nobody's done this. I should find a way to do this. Literally looked like Porky Pig. He literally, I kid you not, at one point, go and watch it. He literally went like this.
Yeah.
I mean, he was Porky. He was red and sweaty
and
stuttering like Porky Pig.
Well, then what was the phrase that was used on Fox News where they said, you know, well, somebody was saying the next day, well, why do you think this happened? And one guy said, I don't remember who it was right now, but said, you know, well, it's just because there are certain people who want things.
Oh, yeah. Bill O'Reilly said
it was O'Reilly. It was O'Reilly. People want
things. It's just, you know, a majority of the country want things.
And I was like rights, like basic human rights to equality.
It's idea crazy. That he thinks that 51% or whatever it is, 51% of the country, meaning minorities, want handouts. And it just couldn't be farther from the truth.
Yeah, I just want to level playing field or a rung on the ladder to climb it myself.
I
can say this.
I grew up in New England, right? I grew up in what is stereotypically educated, you know, the cultural elite, right? I grew up in Rhode Island. I grew up I could throw a rock to Brown University.
Right.
Okay? My white trash mom and family.
Yeah.
Are the worst offenders. If I had to point to the offenders of like the abuse of the welfare system, it's my white trash, fat ass Jewish family from Rhode Island. I mean, I'm serious. It's like this idea that it's like, well, the blacks, they want stuff. It's like, can we stop that? I mean, it's such hate mongering. And I wanted to tell this story real quick. The night before, it's the night before the election, I did this one night only mega concert production of the musical Assassins by Stephen Sondheim.
Yeah.
And if you don't know about it, Launcher, it's a beautiful musical that's very disturbing. It's all about anyone who has ever attempted or successfully tried to kill the President of the United States.
Right.
And Stephen Sondheim wrote a musical. And at the Chicago Humanities Festival, we did a one night only, directed by Nick Bolin, musically directed by Doug Peck, starring present company excluded, meaning me, some of the really tip-top musical theater people in town.
Great.
But I got to do these two really extraordinary monologues by the crazy man who attempted to kill Nixon. But what happened was there's a section of the monologue that I just wanted to sort of do just a little bit and then explain the reaction. So in the monologue, it says, what's going on here, Dick, right? The woods are burning, you know. Schmucks like you tell us that everything's great, it's fine, it's Miller time. What Miller time? What's going on? We want to make things better, but how? Let's have an election. Great. Great. The Democrats say they'll fix everything the Republican fucked up. The Republican says they'll fix everything the Democrat fucked up. But who's telling the truth? Who's lying? Someone is lying, but who? We read, we argue, we guess, but deep down, we know that we don't know.
Mm.
And when I said those lines, this audience of 1,100 wealthy white people burst into applause.
Hmm.
There was some awareness in that audience, as demographically myopic as it was, that there was some truth in this crazy person's ramblings.
Hmm.
That at some point, I'm a big fan of President Obama. Haven't always been, but I am. And I'm sure that Mitt Romney, in his own way, is a kind and decent man. But ultimately, what is scary for all of us, and the reaction to this crowd on Monday night, that like in the middle of a monologue, I had to sort of stop and wait for this response about the idea that like we really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is what scares us. It's scary, and that's why people on both sides react as dramatically as they do, I think, is that we ultimately, I want to, I'm a liberal Democrat, so I want to believe what President Obama says, and I look at his family, and I get all, you know, I get all sort of eclipsed. I do, and I see them as such a beautiful, functional family for the first time in my memory in the White House, and I want to believe him, and I want to believe what he says and what his people say, and then I think, oh, then there's a Rahm Emanuel, who's a close ally, and I'm not so sure I believe a word that comes out of Rahm Emanuel's mouth, who is also a liberal Democrat, and so it has been interesting, I think, on both sides of this debate, and to really wonder who's got our best interest at heart. Because if you really believe with all of your heart and soul that queers shouldn't marry and that black people are trying to take over the country and turn into a socialist welfare state, if you truly believe these things, then you really do believe that Mitt Romney would have been better for our country.
Sure.
If you believe, you know, obviously like you and I do, that that we live in a world in which kindness and making sure that the most vulnerable of us deserve to be at least lifted on some level when they need help, and that that this country should be available to everyone, not just the 1% who inherited money from their families or whatever, then you will trust in President Obama. But it is scary that we don't really know.
Well, and we don't know. We can know. I mean, I think it's to what end? What is success?
Right.
To you.
Right.
For the nation.
For the nation.
Is it financial success?
Right.
Is it community?
Right. Is it uplifting everyone?
I mean, so it's like, yes, you could say, well, these are guiding principles by which we want our country. And some people think, well, this will make our country more abundant, and this makes our country more abundant. And I think that, you know, I do think it comes down to different people have, you know, I mean, I think most people think we shouldn't kill somebody, but maybe not. I mean, people, death penalty, the people against the death penalty, you know. You know, and the people usually for the death penalty are against abortion. So it's all fucked up.
Once again, I'm going to say this after having said that bipartisan sort of speech I just made. Conservatives can suck it. I read something recently that I thought sums up, and it made the sort of like rounds of, you know, people reposting it on different social media. And it sums up for me what I believe and what I think President Obama is about. And it was a proverb, I'm not sure who said it, but an ancient proverb that said, a true man plants a tree knowing that he'll never get to enjoy its shade.
Well, and I think that what was so amazing is his speech. And if you haven't seen this speech, go and Google, like, Obama thanks his staff.
Oh, oh, oh.
But he was in this small room, low ceiling. You know, you could just really tell it was just some sort of office where the,
right,
you know,
at
all
McCormick
of the,
Place, it's some like
right,
meeting room at
meeting
the convention
room,
center.
Office, and
neon lighting.
You know, it's where all these not young neon, kids, you know, I mean, definitely probably the median age in the room was probably 26.
Right.
And, you know, all having kind of their first jobs these past few years, you know, it felt like. And, you know, really just came in there and tearfully with grace and humility.
And exhaustion.
Just, and exhaustion. And obviously just raw, but totally composed. And so eloquently and from the heart just thanked them and said, you know, even if I had lost, that you all have shored me up. And this next generation, he said, you know, when I was your age, meaning when I was this young 20-something who became a community organizer in Chicago on the South Side, because he said I didn't have a presidency or a major,
right,
major election to get.
He said
he didn't have a major election to get behind. You know, he said he knew nothing. And he said what these kids and got young people know about how to mobilize, how to make things
right,
happen,
and I think that,
how to get the vote to, you know, advance, how to in a grassroots way make a major election happen, the biggest election, you know, the presidential
the
election.
The emotional
happen.
Part of it, I think, for him was that, which really got me, as he was saying it, was that I think when he started to tear up was the idea that regardless of whether he got reelected,
yeah,
or regardless of whether this person hates him or that person likes him or agrees, or is that the whole reason why he got into this in the first place was to inspire and to connect everybody to this larger world of America.
And to have made a difference. And
that's
he said,
it.
I made a difference in each one of you.
Right. It means that he's doing something right, that these people are even there.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, that
and what
is the difference.
And what they're going to accomplish,
like,
in their lives.
If that's your guiding principle, then he was successful.
Right.
Whether he won or he didn't win.
Right.
You know, and that's what I'm saying when we say, well, who's right? Well, I think it's not right or wrong, because it's, you know, I mean, only time will tell, and even time doesn't even tell sometimes what's right or what's wrong. It's just, you know, what is your guiding principle? Like, what is your mission statement? What do you want? And the problem is that a lot of different people want a lot of different things, and they've written their own mission statements on America.
And do they want it now, or do they want it for the next generation, or do they want it who do they want it for, you know? Who do they want it for? They certainly want it for themselves.
And what are they being motivated out of? Fear?
That's why I go back to that
proverb. Out of, are you motivated out of, you know, strength and hope and love?
Or greed?
Or greed? Or are you fear? I mean, I think that that, to me, is the difference. I do believe that, you know, everything... You know, I believe that at least for me, the Democratic Party, of which I align myself with today, you know, is a party. And obviously, these parties change. They definitely do. You know, when you look at the big span of centuries.
Yeah, Lincoln was a Republican.
You know, it is one that I don't want to operate my life on any level in fear. I just don't.
Right.
You know, I don't believe anything good comes from that. I don't feel good in that. And if I died tomorrow, I'd like to just die without that fear. I'd rather die without the fear, you know?
I do.
And so I guess it's like, I think that the Republican Party, you know, they have made, and I think Matt Owl was one of the big people who said this post, on the post coverage, you know, they have unfortunately made a platform based out of fear and exclusion, and that kind of platform is not going to sustain them. And I think that's what these marriage, you know, what these marriage amendments say, is that there are people who actually want to move, you know, want to move forward, as the Obama campaign said, you know, don't want to live in fear. I don't want to think that what you actually do in your own house destroys me, you know. And so I think that I just think it's so historic. I honestly, you know, and I've said this a couple of times, that, you know, when Obama won, I was in Chicago the first term. I was in Chicago, you know, I did not go down to Millennium Park. And I remember the second that he won, you know, I was so excited. And then almost immediately, just kind of like afterthoughts, like the ticker tape, like as they're doing the other night on the 6th, when it's like, okay, this state's for Obama. And then bottom, you see like some House of Representative people from like, you know, Utah that you don't know and you don't care about, perhaps, if you're not from Utah. You know, at the bottom was this thing about Prop 8, you know, about California voting against. And it was just like, I want to be happy on this night. I want to be happy on this night. But once again, we're not invited to the party. And I felt so excited this past Tuesday that actually it was like what aligned was Obama's, as you said eloquently, you know, how important to reelect him was. But then to have the first openly gay senator in Tammy Baldwin from Wisconsin, a very tight, very huge race, for all four states, vote at least toward the possibility of marriage equality in Maine, Maryland, Washington, and
voting down the ban in Minnesota, right?
Yep. And then, you know, and then just to know that we're going to have more openly gay members of Congress.
Like from my hometown.
Yes.
David Cicilline, he used to be the mayor of Providence. You know, the funny joke about David Cicilline is that Rhode Island is a typically very, and Providence is a very blue collar.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's blue state because it's New England, but like there's a very blue collar, conservative, Catholic, his name is Cicilline.
That's showing that like blue collar, middle class people can thrive in a state along with the very elite Newport News people.
Exactly.
Right?
The joke in Rhode Island, I always joke about Rhode Island, is that like the conversation when Cicilline was running for mayor or for Congress is, you know, two guys sitting around at a diner somewhere in Rhode Island and saying, hey, what about this Cicilline guy? Wait a minute, isn't that guy a fag? Yeah, but he's so-and-so Cicilline's kid. Oh, yeah, I'm going to vote for him.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, so small.
Italian Trump's gay.
Yeah, Italian Trump's
in
gay.
In Rhode Island, Italian Trump's gay. So, although I have to say...
And they used to say in the Jewish community, Dr. Trump's gay, too.
Doctor. Oh, hello. Is he a doctor?
He's fine.
Although I have to say, several friends of mine in Providence are not particularly pleased with Mr. Cicilline. I mean, gay friends of mine who don't think he's a particularly good... has done a particularly good job. But he did get reelected, which is interesting.
Well, Jared Polis reelected. I mean, I think he is the longest serving openly gay member of Congress. And then I think, you know, the other big win, too, in the heartland, again, you know, when Aya judicially voted for same-sex marriage, you know, there's this backlash by the very the conservatives saying Justice Wiggins, and he was retained. So, I mean, I think, you know, many people thought there would be a huge campaign against him, and it just wasn't.
Well, part of what happened was in the midterm elections, in 2010, mm-hmm. when so many people who did support gay rights and stuff like that did get ousted, I think it sent shivers of action through a complacent liberal progressive group,
yeah,
in which you know, we can sort of look at TV and media and think that the times are changing, and of course they are, and they're changing exponentially like a snowball going down a hill. But that means that the backlash against it is even more intense.
Mm-hmm.
Even more intense.
And it's that pendulum, right? We're really having to stand up
strong.
And
it creates a backlash. And I think the midterm elections in 2010 was a big, you know, when all the Tea Party people get in, you know, which, you know, make the Republicans look like, you know, make the Republicans look like FDR.
Yeah.
And so, not even FDR, they make them look like Eleanor.
Yeah.
And so, I think there was this wake-up call of like, wait a minute, we gotta get out there, we gotta show who we are and what we stand for, and the retaining of Justice Wiggins, who was one of the justices who voted for gay marriage in Iowa, is a great sign. And also Elizabeth Warren in Boston.
Oh my gosh!
I mean, what an interesting, cool. I mean, people, it's interesting.
It is the year of the women too.
Well, look at New Hampshire. New Hampshire's like all ladies.
Exactly, but also with McCaskill, and I mean, just so many, even Republican ladies. And I will say,
McCaskill, I mean, she had to win against that fucktard. Yeah.
But I have to say, you know, what's amazing is that it is a year for women too, at the same time that it's a year for us as GLBT people. And I think that it's very interesting that you look at that Republican convention and the Republicans are really going to have to do some major rehash, because it was so anti-women and platformed anti-gay. That, you know, I think
and
that
anti-diversity.
Was a huge,
and I mean, anti-diversity. Just watching, if you had the sound down watching the Republican convention, yeah, and you saw, I mean, you know, it would have been so frightening if Romney had won. When you look at, so we watched Romney's concession speech, this dour speech. I mean, he said the right things, but somebody else wrote it, and there doesn't seem to be much conviction in it. That's just my opinion. I mean, his body language. I mean, where's Alex Billings? Where I need some viewpoints on it. But like, just watching him give that speech was so unconvinced of what he was saying, although the words were
right
good. And then you look at the crowd, and it is the least diverse crowd.
Oh, but it has been
Klan rally.
It
and
has
then,
been.
And then it
the
goes
Republican
to Obama,
convention.
And it was so diverse. Now imagine if Romney had won, had been the other way around. It would have been. I mean, it just. I mean, it's almost in that when you look at that, it seems inevitable that Obama had to win, because for whatever it's worth, whether you like it or not, the crowd of the Obama post-election, you know.
It looks like America.
It looked like America.
That was my first post on Facebook right after. I was like, that looks like America.
This dude who tweeted.
It was like a United Colors of Benetton
ad. Well, that's who we are.
And young and old and everything that he's been saying that. Absolutely.
I'm saying this as a white guy. I mean, I'm Jewish, so I guess I'm not completely white, whatever that means. I mean, I'm not totally Caucasian.
But it was totally. And I will say, too, and then we're going to have to go to the news, but I want to say that, you know, I believe that LGBT people who came out this year really helped push this presidency to a win, because, you know, we went up in the exit polls from 4% to 5% of the vote. And how we vote, you know, the president got 77% of our vote, according to this poll. So, you know, as far as the Hispanic vote, you know, the gay vote, I mean,
but also our allies, you know, when there was so much on Facebook about like, if you support the Republican platform about gay rights, then please defriend me. So it was calling on our allies, not just us, but
that's
our allies.
That's a whole other conversation. I actually don't want them to defriend me, because I actually want them to be a part of my community.
I want them to defriend me on Facebook. I don't want them on my Facebook. I don't want to hear that crap.
Yeah, but I want them to see my life. And that's what I was going
to
say here a few minutes ago.
Family.
Well, but they can watch Modern Family, and it's a television show, and it doesn't feel real to them. And I, you know, I posted something a couple of weeks before the election, basically saying, you know, for people who, you know, who think that these gay rights issues, you know, are just platform issues, and I should want something else more. Like, I should want healthcare more, or I should care about our economy more, or I should care about any of that stuff more. I want to say, you know, yes, I want to care about key issues and not have to care about my basic rights.
Right, exactly.
I would be very curious how I would vote if We had same-sex marriage. If my rights were protected,
right.
Because I don't know how I would vote.
Right.
You know, I actually might.
I definitely
flip-flop.
Would have not voted for Romney because he's.
Well,
a robot.
I wouldn't have either. But interesting. But I can't even go there. Like hypothetically, that's not the kind of vote I'm looking at. If I was voting on healthcare, if I was voting on
right, and not basic
if votes. I was voting on immigration, if I was voting on physical things. How would I vote? I don't have a fucking clue because I never get to walk to an election and vote that way.
Right.
You know, I just have to go. I'm going to make do. I'll be fully self-supporting. I'll deal with whatever comes. We survive no matter what it is.
Right.
It's harder. It's easier. It's whatever
right.
for me.
We survive.
You know, we survive. But I have to vote for a community of which I'm a part of or ostracized in or however you
right.
are ghettoized in. I have to vote for that first.
Right.
It's kind of like a suffragist, you know, if you
yes.
got the opportunity to vote, saying, do you want to vote for physical stuff or do you want to no
or
I need to vote for my freaking vote
right.
I have to have a vote first
right.
you know
have
and
to
so
participate.
I feel like I go to the election every year and go who's going to just continue to give me a voice and a vote and so I don't want to take away my voice in any format. I feel like it's been our biggest stride is yes visibility on television but I think the biggest stride is that one or two more people who in the past 4 years maybe have gotten to know me
right.
have maybe started to get to know any gay person. I mean, I'm using me figuratively as any gay person or has had
but
a gay person.
You are pretty popular.
I'm pretty popular. But has had a gay person come out in their family, their child, their parent, their sibling, their coworker, their ex, whomever. I don't care who it is, your neighbor, you know, somebody who really did something amazing for your family and you didn't know they were gay. I don't know what it is.
Or a teacher, a doctor.
I mean, that old adage that, you know, Colonel Kammermeyer said, you know, we are everywhere. We are protecting you. We are doing everything. We're defending your country. I think it's vital. So I understand you and other people saying defriend me and maybe your Facebook. I don't use my Facebook
I
just for
I
fun
actually
because...
I didn't actually do that.
I know you didn't.
It was,
but
I thought it was interesting. And I don't think
and
that
it makes
a lot
for
of
good
people,
radio that you disagree with me. But.
Yeah, that's true. And I also don't think that most people defriended. I think that it was a way of saying, are you with me?
Yeah. And I have to say that it's really interesting for me to look at who are my friends, because I have a lot of them, who liked Romney. And I welcome the fact that we're still friends, and I welcome the fact that, you know, they live in different parts of the, usually they're not here, they live in, you know, in different parts or their age or whatever, and I know that I'm in their life, and I know that, you know, they're in my life, and so if we ever get level, they may have some things to teach me about the principles,
sure.
because I don't think they're horrible people, you know, and it's why I love having a podcast, it's why I love having a radio show,
right?
Hey, we've got to tell you what else is going on in the news, although much of the news is political, and what's going on in entertainment news and around the world, because the world, there is a world at large besides just the United States of America. And then we'll be back because Mitchell and I have to talk very briefly about two very big concerts, Barbra Streisand and Olivia Newton-John.
ONJ.
ONJ.
Vancouver is home to Western Canada's largest LGBT population, and now you can enter for your chance to win the Lights, Camera, Attraction prize package to Vancouver, British Columbia. A safe and welcoming destination for diehard shoppers, avid outdoor thrill seekers, nightlife aficionados, and dedicated food lovers, Vancouver is a world-class city offering something for everyone. From sports pubs to drag shows, leather bars to dance clubs, lounges and restaurants, Vancouver's got it all. Plus, Vancouver Pride celebrations and the Vancouver Queer Film Festival in July and August, and Whistler's Winter Pride in February. Tourism Vancouver is pleased to offer you and a guest the chance to win a trip to Vancouver in 2013. For a chance to win the Lights, Camera, Attraction sweepstakes, visit tourismvancouver.com/lights by November 30th, 2012 to enter. That's tourismvancouver.com/lights.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News. President Obama won a second White House term Tuesday night, convincingly defeating Republican nominee Mitt Romney. Obama's projected victory came shortly after he was declared the winner in the crucial battleground state of Ohio. And in her race for the United States Senate seat, Tammy Baldwin made history by edging former Wisconsin Governor Tommy Thompson to become the first openly gay person in the national legislative body.
The vote for marriage equality in four states, Maine, Maryland, Minnesota, and Washington State, made history when all four states voted for marriage equality on November 6th. Six U.S. states and the District of Columbia allow same-sex marriage, but those decisions were made through judicial and legislative actions.
Sean Patrick Maloney, a staffer for former President Bill Clinton, won in his attempt to be the first out gay member of Congress from New York State. Congressman Jared Polis easily recaptured his seat in Colorado, becoming the most senior openly gay member of the United States House. Gay Congressman David Cicilline retained his post after a campaign that included a National Republican Congressional Committee ad linking him to a convicted pedophile and murderer he represented as a defense attorney 20 years ago.
In New Hampshire, Democratic Stacey Loftin became the first openly transgender lawmaker in the state. Loftin won one of three seats in the state House of Representatives in Ward 4.
On November 7th, Greenberg Quinlan Rosner Research conducted an exit poll that found 5% of voters self-identified as gay, lesbian, and bisexual, and more than three-quarters of them voted to re-elect President Obama. The poll, which did not ask voters if they identified as transgender, found that 77% of the LGB respondents voted for Obama, while 23% opted for Romney.
The highest judicial commission of the Presbyterian Church USA published a final decision this week in an internal disciplinary case, holding that the Reverend Laurie McNeil did not commit any offense by marrying her same-sex partner. Despite stipulated evidence that McNeil had married her same-sex partner and was living in her with New York, court officials determined that because there was no direct evidence of sexual activity, pictures, or a witness, there was no proof of a sexual relationship.
An Illinois court ruled in favor of adult entertainment company Flavorworks, awarding it $3 million against a Virginia man, Kaiwan Fisher, and a Delaware man, Cornelian Brown. Fisher and Brown used their paid memberships on Flavorworks, which specializes in ethnic gay porn, to download movies and distribute them for free on BitTorrent sites, allowing downloaders to see the films for no charge.
Lambda Legal filed a friend of the court brief on behalf of law enforcement gays and lesbians and four of its statewide and regional chapters in support of Kelly D. Glossop, the partner of deceased Missouri State Trooper Dennis Engelhard. Engelhard died in the line of duty on Christmas Day 2009. The Missouri Department of Transportation and Retirement System is denying Glossop, Engelhard's partner of 15 years, spousal benefits.
Outspoken pro football player Chris Cluey, a supporter of marriage equality, has quit his post as a contributor to Minnesota's St. Paul's Pioneer Press because of an editorial on same-sex marriage. The newspaper gave a lukewarm nod to a proposed amendment to the state constitution that would define marriage as a strictly heterosexual union. Cluey, who plays for the Minnesota Vikings, tweeted, "Sent my email to the @PioneerPress informing them I will no longer contribute to their blog network. It will be my last post on this site."
The San Francisco Health Commission unanimously voted to implement the recommendations set forth in a resolution authored by Supervisor Scott Weiner and passed by the San Francisco Board of Supervisors last month. The recommendations remove transgender exclusions from the Healthy San Francisco Health Access Program.
Bradley Manning, the Army soldier accused of leaking more than 500,000 confidential U.S. documents to the website WikiLeaks, has offered to plead guilty to some charges during his ongoing pretrial hearing. Manning's civilian defense attorney, David Coombs, released that the soldier is willing to admit guilty to some lesser charges if the military will amend or strike some of the 34 charges against him.
Florida A&M University offered to pay $300,000 to the family of Robert Champion Jr., a drum major who died after being hazed. However, Pamela and Robert Champion Sr. were insulted by the offer and rejected it. Champion Jr., a 26-year-old openly gay student, died November 19, 2011, after being beaten aboard the charter bus parked at the Rosen Plaza Hotel.
In Colorado, Denver Democrat Mark Ferrandino has become the first out gay LGBT legislator in state history to preside over the chamber. Nominated as Speaker of the Colorado State House of Representatives, Ferrandino will accept the gavel January 9th, the first day of the 2013 legislative session. Ferrandino's election comes 6 months after the former Speaker, Republican Frank McNulty, shut down the state house to kill a bipartisan civil unions bill that Ferrandino co-sponsored.
In Kansas, voters of the cities of Salina and Hutchinson voted to repeal gay-inclusive anti-discrimination laws. The Salina ordinance, overturned 54% to 46%, banned discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. The one in Hutchinson, rejected 58% to 42%, covered sexual orientation only. Lawrence is now the only city in the state with an LGBT-inclusive anti-discrimination law.
In Arizona, GOP candidate Paul Dabeaux overcame publicity from a messy split from an ex-boyfriend to be reelected sheriff of Pinal County. Dabeaux originally ran for Congress and even chaired Mitt Romney's presidential campaign in Arizona. However, a story ran in February in which Dabeaux's ex, Jose Orozco, accused him of asking Orozco to sign a confidentiality agreement about their relationship, and allegedly threatening him with deportation after he didn't sign. Dabeaux, denying the allegation, dropped out of the congressional race and ran again for sheriff.
In North Dakota, voters have elected the first openly gay state representative to the state's legislative assembly. The race saw first-time candidate Democrat Joshua Boshi winning the highest percentage of votes among four candidates contending for two seats in the legislature.
In world news, Spain's constitutional court upheld the legality of the country's same-sex marriage law on November 6th. In doing so, the court rejected an appeal contending that marriage in the Spanish constitution means only a heterosexual union. The country's top court voted 8-3 to dismiss the conservative Popular Party's appeal that was filed shortly after Spain became the world's third country to approve marriage equality. Since Spain's parliament passed the marriage law in 2005, more than 22,000 gay marriages have taken place in the country.
In France, the country's socialist government adopted a draft bill to authorize marriage equality and same-sex adoption. French President François Hollande made the issue a key part of his electoral platform, stating it was an advance for all of society. This development occurred despite opposition from the Roman Catholic Church and others.
In Chile, Jaime Parada made history by becoming the first openly gay man elected to municipal government in the country. Parada was elected as councilman to Providencia, a commune in Chile's capital of Santiago.
Malawi's government is moving to suspend laws against homosexuality. They have ordered police not to arrest people for same-sex acts until Parliament has reviewed the anti-gay measures.
In Scotland, a teenager has admitted killing a gay barman who tried to comfort him about his sexuality. Ryan Esquierdo, 19, strangled Stuart Walker, 28, to death and then set the victim's body on fire at an industrial estate. Esquierdo was originally charged with murder. However, the High Court accepted his plea to the lesser charge of culpable homicide after hearing he had suffered traumatic abuse as a child.
And in Australia, Benjamin Norris, who won that continent's version of the show Big Brother, proposed to his boyfriend on live TV after winning the contest. Norris, one of 16 housemates on the show, was the last contestant standing and won $250,000. However, he surprised the audience and the host when he got down on one knee and asked partner Ben Williams to marry him.
In entertainment news, trans rights advocate Chaz Bono is on a mission to lose at least 50 pounds. Bono, who is now 43, is making a public attempt to lose the weight by sitting down with Dr. Travis Stork, the doctor's co-host and an ER physician. Now weighing 250 pounds at a height of 5'5", Bono wants the physician's help in losing 50 to 80 pounds.
Five-time Tony Award winner Angela Lansbury, age 87, plans to return to the New York stage in the fall of 2013 in a revival of Enid Bagnold's The Chalk Garden. Nominated for the 1956 Tony Award as Best Play, The Chalk Garden centers on a wealthy and eccentric Mrs. St. Maugham, who is raising her spoiled teenage granddaughter with the help of an ex-convict butler. Miss Madrigal, a mysterious new governess, shakes things up as she coaxes flowers in a barren garden to grow and urges the granddaughter to bloom as well.
On November 13th, Shout Factory will release a Music Cares tribute to Barbra Streisand on DVD and Blu-ray. Celebrating Streisand's Music Cares Person of the Year Award and a 2011 gala event in L.A., Music Cares features Streisand and all-star guests including Tony Bennett, Faith Hill, Diana Krall, Barry Manilow, Seal, Stevie Wonder, and more performing many of the songs she made famous.
On the reality competition show X Factor, out gay performer Jason Brock was the first finalist to be voted off this show's second season. Brock, age 35, lost after going head-to-head with CeCe Fry, who is 21.
And Sundance Channel has unveiled its 2013-14 original scripted development slate, revealing five new dramas. One of the dramas is T, a personal look at Terrence, a transgender male who has recently undergone gender reassignment surgery and is beginning to live life as a man. The series cuts between Terrence's emotional struggle in the present and his past as Thora, a lesbian student activist at Mount Holyoke College circa 2005. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and the rest of you who know who you are. This is Mr. Murray Hill, Mr. Showbiz, 5'4", and nothing more. I am telling you right now, this is the best podcast in the world. What podcast is it? The Windy City Queer Cast. Tune in right now and all the time for free. And tell one of your friends, even if they're not gay. Showbiz.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of November 12th, 2012, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Don't miss the 10 Men of Gentleman's Rule, the hot new singing sensation making their debut at the Riverfront Theater November 13th through the 22nd. For tickets to Gentleman's Rule, visit riverfronttheater.com.
Don't miss Scrap Arts Music at the Harris Theater as they deliver an intoxicating mix of rhythm, energy, and the most inventive percussive arts concert on stage today. Five virtuosic musicians deliver adrenaline-laced performances using over 100 invented instruments. November 24th and 25th only. For tickets, visit harristheaterchicago.org.
Hailed as hotter than hot, River North Dance Chicago returns to the Harris Theater for two performances only, November 16th and 17th. Celebrating its 20th anniversary, artistic director Frank Chavez curates an evening of the company's most compelling works, including two world premieres. Tickets start at just $30. Visit rivernorthchicago.com.
At the Flash won Pride Films and Plays Great Gay Play Contest this year, and now it's running in a full production through December 16th at the Center on Halstead's Hoover Leppin Theater. At the Flash is a fierce and funny play that condenses 50 years of LGBT history into a fascinating and thought-provoking one-man play. Visit pridefilmsandplays.com for tickets. Don't miss At the Flash, a Pride Films and Plays production at Center on Halstead.
And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hi there, this is Deb Pierce reminding you it's okay. Go ahead. You're not alone. Post a comment.
On a clear day, rise and look around you, and you'll see.
So just to kind of wrap up this very political show with something light and frothy and fun and lovely, not that the election wasn't, but you and I both had these
iconic
and seminal figures in our lives, Barbara Streisand and Olivia Newton-John. I did not get to go to Barbara Streisand. You went to Barbara Streisand. We just went this weekend to see Olivia Newton-John Aurora.
In Aurora, Illinois.
It was a lovely Paramount Theater. Sold out.
It was great. What I, just very quickly, is that I went to see Barbara at the United Center.
Right.
In Chicago.
It was, of course, sold out.
Sold out. 20,000 people. She made it feel like a living room.
Yeah.
Whatever your preconceived notions of her, she was so warm and so Bubby-like, for those of you who aren't familiar with the Jewish tongue. Bubby means grandmother. She was like, it was like Bubby was in our living room singing your favorite songs. She was beyond my expectations, and I have very high expectations because she's my diva. She opened with On a Clear Day You Can See Forever and belted it out of the park, and then we all got, you could feel 20,000 people sit back in their seat and go, oh, Barbara.
It was so good.
And then we went to this rather large theater in Aurora.
The Paramount Theater. The Paramount Theater. They're doing shows now and concerts.
And
Indigo Girls
huge.
Were just there. It's huge.
I don't know how many people at seats. It's not 20,000, but it's huge.
It's at least 1,100 or
so. It was more than that. And it was packed.
It was packed. It was packed. And I think, you know, I just wanted to see her. And I just, you know, I mean, she has been, I don't know. As I said, she's the first woman I ever remember kissing.
That's
and I kissed her in a dream when I was like, I don't know, somewhere under 12 years old or 13 years old. I was around Greece and Xanadu, and I believe I had heard that she was potentially a lesbian or bisexual.
I know that whole rumor.
So
that
maybe
went
that
around.
Got it, and I don't have a clue, but that's the first girl I ever kissed. I truly believe it, and I truly hold it.
I do have to say, both of these women, which is interesting, and I don't know if this is. It's just interesting that both of these women have always been very...
both in their 60s?
Both in their 60s. Well, actually, Barbara's 70.
Okay.
Olivia Newton-John, we overheard, 64? Was 64.
Something like that?
It's funny because Olivia's had more work done than Barbara.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if even Barbara's had any work done.
Yeah, but when you're really that blonde, it's hard.
It's hard. She was,
you don't
she
age
was beautiful.
As well, but she looks great.
She looked great.
Her voice was amazing.
I know. You know, it's funny because people start Market Days and...
I did not want to see her at Market Days.
I didn't. I
stayed away.
Crowded.
So it wasn't because I didn't see her for the first time.
It was just, it was too crowded. I had seen the Pointer Sisters the night before, and they were great, but it was so crowded. But so friends of mine complained that she did not sound good and that it was disappointing. And I have to say, the minute she started to sing, Amy and I both, we looked at each other and we were like, she sounds real good. I mean,
yeah.
She sang my favorite for those people who maybe maybe we can sort of play a little of this as we're going out is Sam.
Yep.
If you don't remember Sam, people, I mean, that song. And she sang the piss out of that song.
Yeah.
And among other songs. I mean, she sang every hit. Name a hit, she sang it.
Yeah, name a hit, she sang it. She did her Grease medley,
she
which was a big hit. She did
medley.
Her Xanadu
please,
medley.
Please, Mr. Please, Xanadu.
A Little More Love. Which
I honestly love you. A Little More Love from her Totally Hot album.
Love it.
She did some
Have
songs.
You Ever Been Mellow?
Have You Ever Been Mellow? She did some really personal songs that she wrote about her struggles with breast cancer, which she's still very healthy.
Yeah,
anyway,
20
it was
years.
20 years. It was really great.
But she still really had those just, I mean, I leaned over to Mitchell at one point and I said, you know, she was kind of that first Mariah Carey.
Yeah.
Like she had that really high bell note and she still fucking got it.
Yeah, she did.
I was like, you know, there are these women.
She whipped those out.
There are these women of that, you know, I used to say that there were these three women that I always thought like had maintained their voice or their voice had gotten better. And that was Dolly Parton. Barbara's not in that, actually. Dolly.
Because you're an idiot.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think Barbara is just in a whole other category.
Yeah, I know.
But it's Dolly Parton, Betty Buckley, and Cyndi Lauper.
Oh, interesting.
Where I believe that their voices are as good, if not better,
interesting.
Now. And
go again, Dolly, Betty Buckley, and I've seen them all in concert.
Yeah. And they all still have retained all their, and they have a very purity to all three of their voices and that tone that's very clean and clear. And Olivia Newton-John still has it.
Yeah,
she was hitting Mariah freaking notes.
Yeah,
last
those
night.
Little crazy, like,
I mean, she wasn't hitting it like a black woman. It was a super white concert.
Well, we were joking because there was this really incredibly sexy security guard. We were right on the aisle and there was a security guard big. Like, he must have been like 6'4".
And we're all
and, like,
singing around to Have
well,
You Ever Been Mellow?
Even I mean, we sat down, I look over and there's this enormous,
good-looking,
sexy
black man,
black security guard, and I looked at him and I was like, "Thank God you're here, because this place is gonna get rowdy, y'all." It's like, I don't know if you were at the Manilow concert, but man, shit's gonna go down. And he laughed. And then as it's going on, it's, you know, a sea full of the white. I just
whitest
kept imagining
people.
That he was. We were gonna look over, and he was just gonna be shaking his head, just going, "White people,
white people."
I mean, it was so funny. I mean, it was the whitest crowd.
It was so much fun.
It was
though.
White. It was whiter than the Barbra Streisand crowd.
It was whiter than the Romney rally.
I'd say what was sort of gorgeous. Yes, it was. I'd say what was gorgeous about the Barbra Streisand crowd was the diversity in the Barbra's crowd. I mean, there was clearly like rich white Republicans. They were Jews. They were old people. They were kids, little girls who were wearing like Barbra Streisand T-shirts.
Yeah.
There were, my favorite was this group of like 10 gorgeous, like 20 something African American women who, by the way, were dressed to the, I mean, I'm talking gowns.
Yeah.
And there was, they were together, there was like 10 of them, and they were at a pilgrimage to Barbara. I thought, this is so fab.
I have to make one plug before we leave. We did one other really fun thing this weekend was I went for the very first time, and I don't know if it was Mitchell's first time, my first time, to the Black Ensemble Theater.
Oh, yeah.
And to their brand new, beautiful facility. I mean, run, don't walk to go see this facility.
It's just north of Montrose on Clark.
Yeah. And I'm just south of the Andersonville hood and between Andersonville and Uptown.
Yep.
And we saw One Name Only. And I have to say, talk about some church.
Yeah, that people were singing.
I have to tell you, we had the best time. My face hurt. That show has ended, but they have the other Cinderella coming right up. And I encourage you to go. And I think that's a show you can, you know, you really enjoy. But obviously they had some women with the One Name Only. I won't even go into the whole premise. It doesn't matter. But there was a woman doing Tina Turner. There was a woman doing Gladys Knight. There was a woman doing Patti LaBelle.
That was brilliant.
And I mean, she tore it up. And she starts taking her eyelashes off.
Kicking off the shoes.
And when the shoes went off, I mean, the people that I went with, they're all five white people. We like jumped up center. And
I've seen Patti do that live like 6 times in my life.
Well, I've never seen her do it live. And I felt like I saw her do it live.
Because
that
brilliant.
Actress was amazing. And it was the right tone. What I loved about it, it was the right tone of an homage and a wink, wink to the parody. And you know, and it was just perfect.
She was perfect.
So congratulations to Black Ensemble Theater. It's so great to have you in the community. So great to have you in the neighborhood. And I will say, very diverse audience. I would
very
say there
diverse.
Were half African American and half Caucasian people in that
crowd.
And
there was young and there was old. It was quite diverse.
It
was lovely.
Really a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Right,
Jackie Taylor, kudos to you and to the city and everybody who helped make that theater possible after decades of doing work. That's really a space you all deserve. And
gorgeous
and
space.
I will be going back.
Also, another quick plug, day after Thanksgiving, November 23rd, I open in the Sandaland Diaries.
Well, we're going to be talking about that a ton.
Well, just know that start getting your tickets now. They're on
sale. Start getting your tickets now for the Sandaland Diaries and Mitchell Fain, because it wouldn't be the holidays without
Mitchell
Fain.
Well, it always sells out, and I always hate it when people say, oh, I tried to get tickets and I couldn't get it. So start now.
Start now. Oh, what a big week.
I know, huge week.
We are exhausted.
I know.
I'm going to put my feet up.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.